Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this week I have an exciting panel joining me from the center of the known universe, and that is Youngstown, Ohio. We have author, activist, and barkeep Sam Morphy. Sam, good to talk to you again.
Simon, always a pleasure. Looking forward to a great show and solving all the world's problems in an hour and a half.
All right, and you got a great big bucket of your chicken wings by your side, no doubt?
No, I did it beforehand. That's why I was late calling in. I had to wash my face.
And from the City of Angels, we have well-known and very well-respected attorney Peter Haven. Peter, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, the pleasure's mine. Thank you very much. Looking forward to having another wonderful discussion today about all the great topics of the day.
Right. Alas, Attila the Hun, otherwise known as John Perry, cannot be with us this week. He gave me some weak excuse about having to work.
You know what it really was, Simon? I have to interrupt because I'm going to forget to say this because he's not on today. He's leading a protest at Fox Studios that Sean Hannity's being replaced.
Oh yeah. I could actually believe that.
I forget. I had to get it in.
All right. Either that or he's out there, doing PR work for the new Fox station. Is it Fox Sports 1 or something?
God, I don't know.
Oh, I can't.
He's definitely out doing something to keep Hannity on the air. That's one of his heroes.
We also have a special guest joining us this week. And for reasons that I think will become apparent pretty soon, we're just going to call him Nugs. Nugs, great to have you on the program.
Good to be here, Simon.
Okay, I along with many other people, have watched the legal or non-criminalization marijuana debate with interest. From a legal standpoint, it looks like an absolute can of worms. Very much it is pitting a state's ability to legislate against what is federal law. Nugs, you're caught in the middle. Give us the thumbnail sketch.
All right, the thumbnail sketch about medical marijuana here in the state of California is, you're right, it is in somewhat of a gray area. We passed laws here in the state, Prop 215 and Senate Bill 420, that allows any person with a medical condition to go see a doctor and get a recommendation from that doctor saying that he believes that the use of marijuana and or cannabis would greatly influence their progression through their disease or a medical condition. It also allows for them as a patient to grow or cultivate their own cannabis to a certain degree. And, of course, federally, it is a Schedule I drug, meaning that it has no current accepted medical benefits, and it has a high potential for abuse. We walk on the razor's edge through the minefield here in this medical state, trying to figure out what we can and can't do as a patient and a grower.
Peter, You're in California. You obviously know a little bit about the state of play with this game. Do you see the feds, getting upset with the state, and let's say maybe the DEA taking federal action, which would directly go against the the state's wishes?
On the surface, it sounds like there's an inconsistency and there's a contradiction here that can't be reconciled. But I suspect that in reality, the feds really don't care that much about individual users who are taking marijuana and they have some plausible medical recommendation to use marijuana. I personally don't think the feds are going to waste their time trying to prosecute or bust those kinds of users. I think that under the color of federal law, it could, but I just don't think they will.
I agree.
I think they're going to target people who are growing marijuana for sale, large-scale sale, more than 3 to 5 so-called medical users. I think they're going to target those people. I think that anything that moves across state lines is going to draw federal attention. But I don't see a huge conflict now between the states and the feds in and of itself. But having said that, the permissibility of use of marijuana for medical purposes is one thing. But I think people have to realize that it doesn't give them carte blanche to do everything they want with marijuana, and that's probably something that we'll talk about a little bit later today.
And, Sam, your opening salvo, are you – well, I'm not sure that marijuana, medical or otherwise, is legal in Ohio, but, are you planning – marijuana chicken wings?
They actually, believe it or not, I actually sell a beer called Doobie Beer that is legal. And they allege it's got some stuff that's in cannabis that's in it. I don't know if there's any truth to that or not. It's on the situation. It's a high-end craft beer. I think it's got hemp in it, more of anything of that nature. It's really, really a thick base type beer for those people who like that stout and all that sort of thing. It is called Doobie Beer, though. Would I serve marijuana chicken wings? Yes, you bet I would. More people would eat more wings, right, Simon? I'm all for the legalization of marijuana. Always have been. I think it's a disgrace that our laws have been on the books for so long that basically our government and a lot of institutions have made a lot of money off this alleged war on drugs. And then to them, it seems like both Republicans and Democrats and those in power all believe the movie Reefer Madness is what really happens when people smoke some pot and enjoy themselves and whatnot. And if the fact that it can help someone's medical condition, I'm all for that. I don't care what that is. I mean, stem cell research or whatever medicine and technology can come up with to alleviate people's pain and suffering, Sam Murphy supports. I mean, I wish we could do more for people who are suffering, and I think we will in the future if our institutions get out of the dark ages and get into the 21st century. I applaud anybody who's doing things to help people, and if that's what medical marijuana or regular marijuana does, go for it. Pete, I agree with you. And Mark, by the way, if that's your if that's an AKA, it would really go well in Youngstown, Ohio. Mark, one of the most corrupt, typical places to live and grow a family and business up in. But I would tell you that I hope the Fed stays out. I just don't trust them. I trust them a lot less now after Edwin Snowden came out. So that's just a gut feeling.
Now, Nugs, earlier today, you and I were talking, and I have to admit, I was kind of surprised. You know, Sam has just said that he's all in favor of just legalizing marijuana. Now, your view is somewhat slightly different. You would like to see it decriminalized, I believe.
Yes, I believe that if a specific language used in our laws is very important to accomplishing exactly what we need. And blanket legalization so far in the state of Colorado and the state of Washington isn't what I would consider blanket legalization. They allow people to, or recreational users, to carry an ounce or so of personal marijuana. They can't do certain things like grow more than 3 mature plants and 3 immature plants. These type of words that they use in their laws just don't equivalent out to legalization to me.
Peter, you're the legal eagle. Any thoughts on the difference between decriminalization and legalization?
Well, that's very interesting. First of all, I have another question that I'd like to throw out there to get back to later on. But what is the difference between hemp and marijuana? But let's talk about that one later. I'm thinking out loud as to what the difference would be between legalization and decriminalization, and I must admit I'm a little unclear on what the difference would be. To me, legalizing it would be the same thing as decriminalizing it. So what is the distinction, if I may ask?
In my opinion, the difference is legalization would allow big business, big pharma, to push out a small home grower and regulate marijuana to such a degree that it would include high licensing fees, high taxing. With decriminalization, that doesn't include high license fees or certain types of regulations or this whole numbers game.
Well, I think that's very interesting, and I must admit I hadn't thought about that before. I think that, you know, the concern you're expressing is decriminalizing it is one thing, but turning it, letting big business prey upon it as it does so much of everything else in our culture is quite another matter. I fear that if there is blanket decriminalization, that big business will move in regardless. But be that as it may, I get the sense that most police authority figures throughout the United States are just not really targeting and going after simple single end users anymore. It may still be a crime in many jurisdictions. In fact, I think it's a crime in every jurisdiction, subject to medical marijuana exceptions and also the states of, Washington and Colorado. I just don't think they're targeting those people. But I do think that the real problem becomes if people think that it's okay to use marijuana, they start using it more regularly, and then they don't realize the degree to which they can get in trouble for other things, such as driving while under the influence of marijuana, or, as we've talked about before, going to work under the influence of marijuana. There are many jobs that just simply can't have people smoking marijuana while they're working. And,
The thing I would say to that is when people use marijuana and or then drive or go to work, they can be tested positive for marijuana for a long period of time that surpasses the actual high that they have. So this this testing in the workplace and testing while driving really holds no weight in my scale, because the human body can store high levels of THC and marijuana or the active cannabinoids in their blood and fat for long periods of time beyond the actual high that they have.
Okay, but, you know, if I'm an employer, I don't want my employees, you know, turning up drunk, you know, or high. And so I institute a drug testing policy. There's a problem here. You're entirely right.
Yeah, there is a problem.
Yeah, and THC
stays in your system longer than the actual high. So you could have smoked a joint or whatever on the weekend and came back on Monday not high at all, and the THC will still be in your system, and you'll be considered high at that moment, even though you're not. It works differently than us.
And Sam, you're a small business owner, and I'm sure that you may not do drug testing. I doubt you do, but you'd be pretty upset if an employee turned up drunk or high.
Well, I wouldn't. Be difficult enough to. It's a lot easier for me and anybody else to detect when someone's drunk than when they're high. In my experience, maybe for others they can do it better. I'm all for it. If this is the case, I can't wait till they make mandatory drug testing for our government employees. It might free society up a little. Of course, they don't do that. Whenever in our area and in the state of Ohio, when they try to do mandatory drug testing for the elected officials, for government employees, it is always shot down and never gets done. Gee, I wonder why. Of course, I would never do that. I think it's unconstitutional. You know, I think, look, people have a right to do what they want to do, and they're not working for me. I don't own them. They're my employees. When their shift is over, it's their life. When they leave walk outside my business, they go home and do whatever they want to do. Whatever they do, they do. And hopefully they enjoy life. They have a good time. They're responsible citizens and parents and children and friends and all that. When they come back in the next day for their shift, I expect them to give me an honest shift's work, be honest. Work hard, do the best that they can, and go from there. I don't believe in drug testing except for government employees and all that. But I understand what you guys are saying, and I think you bring up a super great point that I smoke a joint on Saturday and enjoy myself and have a great time. On Monday, I go to work. I'm not high, but it's still in my system, in this drug testing system, and in our big brother society culture that we live in now catches me, and now all of a sudden I'm out of a job. Because I enjoy to join on a Saturday.
Discrimination.
That's something wrong. The man who I support as the next president of the United States, Rand Paul, has been running around the country talking about decriminalizing marijuana and all that sort of stuff. And that's probably the way to go, because I think, like you, you guys brought up from Peter and Muggs, you brought up a great point about the big government, big business just hovering over the fact, wow, once it's legal, we're going to come in here, we're going to push the pioneers out of the way, and we're going to come in and we're going to set up jobs, we're going to buy the politicians, our lobbyists, and we'll control the distribution, we'll control the profits and all that. That scares me, too.
Sam, I'm just waiting for Monsanto to come up with a Roundup Ready marijuana.
Yeah, I could. There'd be one. I'll be first one to buy a Monsanto joint. I just can't wait to light that up with you and Manny, Simon.
I'd like to say that when people that are in real pain and are prescribed opiates, they're not discriminated against when they go to work and or drive. There's no breathalyzer test or drug test for opiates. You know, so it's a certain racism there.
But you know, one thing also we have to look at we have to look at, as a society, seriously, the high cost of, this is something Rand Paul talks about with his decriminalization, and to release some of these poor people who are rotting in jail cells, lots of them in a state like mine, Ohio, which has been way behind the years and punished people for, you know, at one point in the 70s, if you got caught with a joint in Ohio, you went to jail for 10 years. It didn't matter how, for 10 years, you paid like a $10,000 fine. Forget about the money. They stuck a lot of decent people behind bars and ruined their lives for one lousy joint on them. I know Ohio is one of many states that did that. There's a lot of people who have been ripped off by this because of that, lost part of the, you know, protective parts of their lives or whatnot, they got caught with a lousy joint on them. And that still happens today, and that's more prevalent in the African-American society, culture, than it is in the white culture. And that has to change. And, you know, people, you know, I just boggled my mind at all these men and women who were thrown in jail to rot because they smoked a dope.
Yeah, and that's another key point is because of legalization or decriminalization would eliminate all those fees and fines and imprisonments, and that's all jobs for those employees, money for the state. All that would go away if legalization was pushed.
Well, do you think it would be made up in tax revenue? So if they legalize marijuana, and I go down to my local liquor state-controlled store to buy my two joints, I pay a tax on it. Like when I was in Amsterdam visiting my relatives, we went and I bought a joint, smoked it in the store, but we paid there was a fee and then there was a tax on it.
So, well, those taxes would greatly outweigh the money that is generated under our current laws.
Okay. It would more than make up for the fines, the fees, and the lost jobs that will come from it because people are out looking for the same dope dealer or this or that. I agree with you 100%.
More than that.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
It has the potential to change global warming by converting the CO2 in the environment to O2. It has the ability to, the plant, I mean, has the ability to benefit us in the textile industry, to the plastics industry, to the reusable or renewable fuel industry. So I
mean, Simon always says it would help the pizza industry immensely.
Exactly, and that too. And it would just make us as Americans more enjoyable and more relaxed.
This brings up a question that Peter asked but didn't quite ask. What is the difference between hemp and cannabis?
The difference between hemp and cannabis, the main difference is that hemp is a male plant used for its fibers to make certain things like textile and plastics and rope and stuff like that. Cannabis is a female plant which contains cannabinoids which influence our brain and our body. That's the difference.
Peter, now you have your answer.
Well, it's very helpful, and I thank you very much for that. I think so-called decriminalizing marijuana is becoming very, very popular these days. And I certainly get a sense that many jurisdictions are moving towards legalization. But I still go back to the point I made earlier, is that there are other problems associated with it. I don't begrudge anyone, quite frankly, I don't begrudge anyone smoking a joint whenever they want to. I mean, I just really don't mind, don't care, it's fine, go right ahead. And if there's a medical purpose, that's fine too, obviously. But there are tensions with other rules and restrictions in our law, our laws and our governance, and people who think they can just do it with impunity may find themselves in a great deal of trouble in other settings. One of the things that people, I think, don't appreciate is the degree to which, you can be charged with driving under the influence if you're under the influence of marijuana. And I know that you pointed out that the testing is imprecise, but that doesn't help. That just makes it worse. And if a police officer detects that there's some erratic driving behavior, and if he pulls you over, and if it's shown that you have any detectable presence of marijuana in your system, that is grounds to charge you with being under the influence. And if you flash a medical permit card that says, it's okay, I have a medical permit, that's not going to help you. That's going to get you in more trouble, because now it's presumed that you're using marijuana regularly, and it's presumed that you're under the influence of marijuana. And people talk about things like, you know, with respect to under the influence laws, and they say things like, well, I no longer am intoxicated, or I'm no longer on my marijuana high. But the test for being charged with some sort of violation of the driving under the influence laws is not whether or not you're intoxicated per se, or whether or not you're high per se, but whether you are, quote unquote, under the influence of something that appreciably impairs your ability to operate a motor vehicle. And you, the user, may or may not be aware of the degree to which they are affected. And it's unclear what long-term use of marijuana does to sensory perception and your ability to do these kinds of things. And the same thing applies to work, and the same thing applies to all kinds of, you know, interpersonal relationships and things like that. So I'm just saying, I don't know what the answers to these questions are, but, you know, we have a problem in this country with the prevalence of alcohol and excess drinking. And it's certainly true that if people feel they can do something more, they will do it more, and that could lead to other problems in their professional lives, personal lives, and whatnot. And in the trying to decriminalize it, I don't think people should forget that there are these other things that they have to think about.
To that, I would say that there is into law that says that you can't drink and drive. There is a law that says your blood alcohol can't be above said percent, 0.08, points, whatever it is. So you can drink alcohol and drive, but you can't be above a certain percentage and drive.
Well, that's it's actually incorrect.
I agree with you. Yes, if you're physically impaired under that, and
yes,
the police officer has the ability to make that judgment,
yes,
then you are right. But
yes,
but according to the law says that it is this certain percentage. But
that's a presumption. And the way the law works in most states is if you're over a certain limit, you're presumed to be under the influence. And under the influence, again, is a phrase that basically means your ability to operate a motor vehicle is impaired substantially or appreciably. But you can be charged with being under the influence, even if you have a blood alcohol level less. If in fact your behavior is such that you clearly were under the influence, it's very rare, and I agree. I grant you that it's become sort of de facto now that if you're not over the limit, they really don't do anything. But in certain circumstances, they
can't.
That's
not true in Ohio.
Yeah, well, you tell me, Sam. What's not true?
Well, I'll tell you what. In our state, because it's such a damn moneymaker, it's beyond. You guys are right about the presumption. You know, there are plenty of people, you know, who are below that level, that percentage level, which is a bunch of bullshit as far as I'm concerned. It's just a way to make more money for the state to keep these people employed because they couldn't find real jobs. But that's a whole other issue. Anyway, in Ohio, and because I've got an OVI last Thanksgiving weekend, and I had to go to the little school that they make you go to, and I had to donate money to Mothers Against Drunk Driving and all that sort of stuff. I went to a school. And at my school, there were six people there who had all got speeding tickets. And by the State Highway Patrol, the two toughest states in America for state troopers are Ohio and California. I'm sure you guys, Peter, you could attest to how tough the California patrols are, right?
They're
really
cracking
up. They don't fool around. They don't fool around. Same thing with Ohio. They're really no nonsense. That's it. You know, if they get you, you're already guilty because they just that's the way they are. And the state. Anyway, you see six people. None of them. They all got OVIs, and they all stood. They all got speeding tickets. The state highway patrol officer then went, asked them permission to go to the post. It was six women. The women are granted permission. They were all on some sort of prescription drug. The six women all worked at a large General Motors complex known as Lordstown, where the cruise is being built. And there's the same state highway patrol officer just kind of waiting there to entrap everybody, and he got them all. Anyway, they were all on prescription drugs of some various sort of thing. And he goes, I'm going to give you an OVI. And they said, why? I haven't been drinking or this or that. They go, read what's on the little pill canister. Don't operate machinery while on this vehicle. Okay?
Yeah.
So they were all given OVIs. Even though they all were working, they had done nothing but speeding. That was their probable cause to pull them over and then go through, you know, check the cars out and do everything naturally. Most people are scared to death and the cops pull you over and they cooperate 100%. And the more you cooperate, the more evidence you give the state to stick to, you know, to sort of look at you. Things I've learned. Okay. One very interesting thing is they brought an attorney into the school who was very versed in fighting OVIs and this and that. And he told the story. He had a client who had an asthma attack, and the client then had his, you know, pulled over into a parking lot and was breath, you know, blowing his breath, you know, the stuff to the inhaler, which I never knew was all alcohol. Well, then someone had called 1-800-GRAB-A-DUI, said the guy was driving erratically. The cops showed up, gave him a breathalyzer. He was he got an OVI.
Now, Sam, I'm sorry.
Okay, so
what does OVI stand for?
Operating a vehicle while impaired.
Okay. We have different acronyms out here.
Driving under the influence.
Okay.
That's what they call it now. But anyway, it's become nothing but a moneymaker. It is, being a bar owner, we fear that because they're going to lower in Europe the blood alcohol level. That my wife's family's from Holland is down to 0.5. And if the United States is going to go that way, remember in the old days, every state had their own limit, and now they don't, because they're all afraid to get government money. The feds control everything, and they lowered it all to 0.08 because the mothers against drunk driving. And now they want to lower it level, you know, lower it even lower. They're even studying that right now, to 0.05. That will put me out of business and put a lot of other small shoppers, people out of business, because we won't be able to compete. The big chain, and naturally the big chain bars, big corporations owned by everybody are pushing for it, because they know it will push a lot of little people out of business. What kills me is in Europe, most people walk. They have public transportation. They go to the neighborhood pub or tavern or whatever. And where I live in Ohio, you have to drive. And in Youngstown, Ohio, we have one little stinking little cab company that it's got like four cabs. It's very difficult, you know, for people to get a cab here to go places. The designated drivers are extremely expensive, and, you know, it's not right. You know, you want to live in a good society. If they really wanted to help stop drunk driving, then put the breathalyzer lock on the wheel, on the steering wheels of everybody's cars. It's just like a seatbelt. It's a safety hazard, but then that would bring down, they wouldn't be able to arrest as many people as they'd like to arrest, and that would have a domino effect on the big business that getting OVI people have gotten, because it's not just
I think it would have a big impact on a lot of people if they had to breathe into that device in order to be able to start their car. I think you might be surprised at the ripple effect throughout all of society if that happened.
Don't you think that would be a good thing?
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. We've talked about this before, and let's say you go out to dinner one night, Saturday night, Sunday night. Let's say you do it two nights in a row, and you have a fair amount to drink. You have, say, three or four glasses of wine both nights. Mm-hmm. And then you get up Monday morning to go to work, and you blow in your little machine, and it says, you still have alcohol in your system. You can't go anywhere. Now, if you are a regular drinker of alcohol, the risk of that happening to you goes up because alcohol stays in your system for a period of time. Same thing is true with respect to marijuana. In fact, if I understand correctly, marijuana stays in your system longer. So I actually think that, you know, the biggest risk of putting these breathalyzers into everything is that, you know, you might cripple capitalism.
Right? How are people going to get to work?
I don't think you're going to cripple capitalism.
I see your point. For certain segment of society, it's always going to happen. I mean, we know that. Regardless of, that's what human nature is. There's always going to be a segment of our society that's going to abuse, use, get away, come up with new ideas that are bad to get around everything. We agree on that?
Well,
nothing we can do about that. It's not, no, but I see it as a way to stop, because I think if I can't blow into my car and I got to go to work, guess what? Someone else is going to drive me, and I'm going to watch what I drink maybe from now on. I think it's going to have a positive effect in the long run. But I see your point. It's a good point.
Well,
you know?
They're talking about installing these interlock devices in California. I am assuming they're talking about it everywhere, but it's not an easy thing. Just imagine all the scenarios. First of all, these things aren't cheap. They cost money. And when you want to get them installed, basically the way it works now is some people are forced to have them installed as part of a criminal penalty, and they have to go to some mechanic or whatever, and it has to be installed. And it costs a few $100. It's not cheap.
Hey, Peter, you know what
they
a cost of an OVI is? $10,000. I'll take the interlock system.
It does. Now, okay, so basically, let's just say, I mean, just walk through it. Let's just say you had a new law that said that these devices had to be installed in all new sold automobiles, and within 5 years, every previous automobile had to have them installed. Okay, maybe you get over that hump. Everybody's screaming and yelling about having to spend money to do this. You have the teetotalers who haven't touched liquor in 30 years who are screaming because, why did they have to pay to do this? But let's say we get over those humps. Now you have situations where, you have all these parade of horrors. Let's say somebody has one drink and then suddenly there's an emergency and they have to start their car and get away and they can't do it, blah, blah, blah. Let's say some prosecutorial agencies start saying, Sam, you'll love this. Some prosecutorial agencies start monitoring the devices. Let's say they're embedded with computer chips. And they start prosecuting people who try to operate their vehicle while under the influence. Because you can get arrested for a DUI if you're drunk, sleeping in your car, and you have your keys in your hand.
Right. Yeah.
So let's say that happens. In other words, it's a great idea, but there it doesn't come without its problems. But the bigger picture is we have states now that are conducting the great experiment. That's one of the great things about the United States is we have 50 minor governments, and a couple of governments are saying, you know what, this is an idea whose time has come. Let's give it a try. Let's see what happens. So let's see what happens. It's going to be very interesting. I don't know what's going to happen.
But to get back to marijuana, there hasn't been any test. Sorry, Simon, go ahead.
No, Nugs, I was heading right to you. There's no way you can put a breathalyzer in a car and test for THC. There's got to be some better method of testing. Is someone high?
You would pee into your car. You'd urinate into your car. or you give blood. You can give blood and you can test for marijuana or for THC. But also, the alcohol has been well studied for many years, and the scientific community agrees that alcohol does impair driving. But there have not been such studies with marijuana.
Do you really want to take the position that you don't think marijuana can impair people's ability to drive? Let's put it this way. Let's say you were going to get on a cruise ship and sail off to some exotic location, or let's say you were going to get on an airplane and fly off to some exotic location. All those industries outlaw those pilots' use. In fact, all personnel's use of those drugs. They don't want to take any chances at all. Railroads, trains, buses.
I would take the position that the person shouldn't be high while they're doing such an important task.
Well,
yes, I agree
if you're going to get on a
but
on,
can they
on
use
a,
marijuana on a time at, other than that? I believe they should have the right.
Okay, so you would feel comfortable if you got on an airplane and the pilot said, "Look, I have a prescription for medical marijuana. I have diabetes, and I take it regularly in anticipation of this flight. I've been off it for 2 or 3 days. Let's fly, ladies and gentlemen."
I would be fine with that. Yeah.
Okay, and I respect that. I don't know if everybody would be. And I can tell you this, I don't think any airline would hire that pilot. I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I don't think they would.
Peter, I got to think that texting is more of a danger to people driving,
yeah,
even with all the laws passed, than people high driving.
And texting is illegal while you drive.
And more people are doing it. I see cops doing it.
Well,
everybody.
We're talking about two different things. We're talking about the legality and the violation.
Right.
Of
no. The legality. Okay, right. But I'm talking about you. It was just a gut feeling. I think the texting and the cell phone use by drivers is more of a danger to people on the road today because of 24/7 than alcohol or marijuana usage is. Because remember, a lot of people aren't drunk on the road if they are at 7 o'clock in the morning. Some are.
Yeah.
I'm not debating that. At 7 in the morning, almost everybody's texting.
I'm more afraid of a pilot being high off an opiate than being high on marijuana while they fly, in my opinion.
Well, you know, it's an interesting debate. I must admit, I don't know. And one of the things that's interesting is I don't think you said it yourself. We've had a lot of research on alcohol, but I don't know if we know about the long-term effects of using marijuana. I just don't know if we know.
We do. We have 3,000 years at least of use, of recorded use of marijuana or cannabis as a medicine and in many other aspects to life. So.
Well,
Peter,
I guess you're satisfied that it doesn't have any sort of long-term side effects. It doesn't diminish capacity in any way. It doesn't dull senses in any way. It has no deleterious effect on the human body at all in any way over a period of time.
Yeah.
I mean, you're satisfied with that. I'm not sure I am.
The Dutch society has weathered the legalization of marijuana for I don't know how many years, but at least 30 since I've been alive. I'm 53. I think it's been legal for at least 40 years there, in parts, not in all of Holland. It's decriminalized, but you can, you know, like I said, I've smoked it and bought it legally and whatnot in the in certain districts. And I think it's but I don't think they've, and if any country would be doing people, and I think people have done studies about the effects in that country and whatnot, and I don't think you see that the dust falling off the face of the earth as a, you know, Amsterdam is in better shape than Detroit. They're not a, you know, it's a very solid country economically, culturally, and whatnot, and I just about everywhere I went in Holland, Peter, people were lighting up. It was a happy and mellow community society.
Well,
and they have far less drug abuse with other hard drugs than any other place.
Well,
good
look,
I just did a quick
Google search while we were talking, just to see if I could come up with something about the long-term effects of marijuana use. The very first thing I clicked on, I have no idea if any of this information is accurate. Let's see. For example, a group of scientists in California examined the health status of 450 daily smokers of marijuana, but not tobacco. They claimed that these smokers had more sick days and more doctor visits due to respiratory problems. They appear to indicate that there is an increased risk of cancer associated with long-term marijuana use, in particular testicular cancer. It appears to affect the immune system of some people, and it appears to increase the incidence of cough and phlegm and chest colds. Now, that's just one study. That may be a complete lie. That may be BS. I don't know. But I do find it I do think that it's unlikely that taking any substance, whatever it is, could be antidepressants, it could be aspirin, it could be marijuana, it could be tobacco, it could be alcohol. I don't believe that taking any of these substances, I don't think we can say they don't have an impact on us. And I'm concerned about all substances, not just marijuana. I mean, I'm concerned about pesticides in our foods and cancer-causing chemicals in things. I'm concerned about breathing secondhand cigarette smoke. I'm concerned about toxins and plastics that leach into our water. You know, it's not just one thing. I just think that everybody needs to make informed decisions about it. And I agree that people should be adults and they should make their decisions and they should be grown up about it. But that responsible adults. And I think but there are consequences. And you really have to be responsible, and you've got to be mature about it. And you know, for every responsible user, as we all know, there's going to be somebody who's irresponsible.
I can agree with that. Yes.
Yeah, it's hard. That's just a common sense thing. Nobody can disagree with that.
But you know, in the same token, of course, no one can disagree with that. It's well said, by the way. My situation is, we've tried this war on drugs. We've tried making it worth making people wear a scarlet letter if they were found with it or busted with it, whether it's been celebrities or the average Joe or the person in the ghetto. That hasn't worked.
Not
we have working. To agree on that. That has not worked. It's been a terrible drain on our criminal justice system and our society. I think it is time, Peter. You know, two states have agreed, like you said, or California's the third one. It's time to legalize it, decriminalize it, tax it, and make it a productive crop in our society, because that's how I feel about it. You know, I think it's unfortunately, Peter, and Mike, you brought up a real good point. I fear the big corporations get in and then they start doing what they did. So they destroyed tobacco and turned it into a chemical. When it was tobacco was first found, it wasn't really it wasn't what it is now. All chemical stuff with very little yeast in it. When the American Indians and the settlers were doing it, it's probably a lot more like marijuana, to be honest with you, a more natural crop. But when by the time they got involved in it and made it an addictive thing, it's terrible. And that, I do fear when the big corporations get in bed with big government, we're not going to get that product that we should that we're entitled to.
We need to put this on a scale and weigh out what are the benefits versus what are the ill effects of these things. And I believe that the benefits will far outweigh the possible problems to our culture and society.
Well, Peter, can I bring up a point?
Oh, yes,
okay.
You can.
Okay, just another. well, and also Muggs and the panel. Because smoking cigarettes is basically illegal in most public places now, for instance, like in the bars in Ohio, you can't smoke. Henceforth, no one's going to be able to light up in a public place. I assume that. I just because they legalized marijuana, no one's going to be able to smoke it publicly. You might have to be specialized bars or taverns or whatever you want to call them, or smokehouses like in Amsterdam when I went to have it, or you'll just be able to smoke it in the confines of your own home.
In public places. That's a very good point, and I assume the answer to that is yes. If you can't smoke in your cubicle, why should you be able to smoke marijuana? Now let's play devil's advocate.
But you can use marijuana in many different ways. You can eat it. You could take a tincture. You could possibly even inject it.
Well,
okay, good point. Good point.
Let me ask you a question. What about this? I'm in downtown LA a lot, and there are a lot of high-rise buildings, and I get in those buildings, and they're all internal air circulation, blah, blah, blah. But one of the things that's interesting is every now and then you get in, you have to get in the elevator, and you ride up in the elevator. And every now and then someone will come in the elevator, and boom, you smell it. It's just it just engulfs the whole elevator. Now,
smell of marijuana.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's unmistakable. So everybody's had something like that happen, and it's like, wow. And now, is that secondhand smoke? Does the cubicle worker who sits next to that person, do they have a right to say, look, I can't work with this?
Hey, Pete, can I ask you a question? Are you talking about like someone who was just in the elevator who was smoking and came in and could the smell of marijuana?
No,
like,
no,
cigarette
no,
smoke?
No.
No, the smell
it's
on their clothing.
Right.
It's secondhand smoke clinging to their clothes, which happens with tobacco users as well.
Right.
And it's sometimes if they're fresh from I'm smoking a joint, it can be very fresh and pungent and powerful. I assume, I'm just guessing in that regard, I'm assuming that's what happened. Or perhaps they smoke all day long in their car or at their home at night, and it just pervades everything about them. You know, we had a lot of asbestos cases in in California, in the United States, and a lot of the claimants were the wives and children of the workers, because the wives would come home and wash the clothes, and they later developed asbestosis, and they brought claim.
That's
a good point.
The point behind, you know, the outlawing smoking in restaurants and in bars is because tobacco contains many cancer-causing chemicals that cause cancer and other breathing problems. But marijuana hasn't been associated with that causing cancer. In fact, there are many studies that show that it suppresses cancer and slows cancer cell growth.
Yeah.
Let's also add that it helps people on chemotherapy get their appetite back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and appetite.
Well, I certainly hope those studies prove to be correct. Nothing would make me happier than seeing something like that. Certainly, I think everyone would agree. I've heard people claim when they've been charged with marijuana use in the past that the levels in their system were caused by secondhand smoke or just breathing it off of other people. That was their defense in a criminal proceeding.
Yes, I've heard that too.
So I don't know. Well, you know, some people, you can always tell by the person uttering it whether or not it's going to work. You know, oh, no, that's a secondhand smoke. You're like, yeah, come on, seriously? And then you see other people say it, and you're like, yeah, I believe it. Next.
Yeah, people have lost their Olympic medals over such comments.
Yeah, athletes used to use that a lot. No, I was at a rock concert. That was the big defense for a while. I was at a rock concert. Everybody was smoking. I kid you not. I'm pretty sure that Ricky Williams said that once. It may have been him. I could be wrong. I love Ricky Williams. I think he's a great football player. I love him. But I'm pretty sure.
Look at his dread. He's smoking.
I'm pretty sure on one occasion he said, or somebody in the NFL said, "No, I didn't smoke it. I was at a concert." So, you know, these are interesting issues, and I don't know the answers to them. And I certainly hope and think that marijuana has great medical benefit, and I hope that proves to be the case. And we're going to have to wrestle with some of these problems. But while society's wrestling with them, the users themselves are going to have to wrestle with them. Because I can't help but think that if you're cruising down the highway and a cop pulls you over because he thinks you're not behaving particularly well, and you say, "It's okay, officer, I have a medical marijuana card," I can't help but think you've just gotten yourself in a lot of trouble.
Hey, Simon, don't pull Simon over because he's blasting his Deep Purple too loud.
Yeah, so I just, you know, be careful and be responsible out there. Be careful and be responsible.
No. Here's the real issue. If you're going to walk into a serious meeting, or even a less than serious meeting, you know, Sam calls his staff in to talk about a new style of chicken wings that he's going to be putting out at Bill's place. And he wants everyone to be on board. You can spot the marijuana user just by the smell. I mean, it's not secondhand smoke so much as, he did a doobie. I mean,
well, you know, I honestly don't know.
You could have residue on
the
finger.
If you can smell it, what does that mean? I mean, you're inhaling something.
Yeah, well, they're called terpenes, which give marijuana the smell, which affect the high that you get, but is not a active cannabinoid and will not get you high.
No, But my point is, you, the user, have just painted yourself into a really bad position. Right?
It's the same thing if someone's abusing, drank a lot of alcohol before, too. They give off an odor, too.
Yeah,
right.
And look, you're putting yourself in a bad position. I mean, I've worked in places where, some of the guys who had, jobs where they had to transport documents and things, and you could smell it. And, look, if I'm a lawyer, if I walk into a room and people smear marijuana on me, that's it. I'm done. I mean, I can't do anything.
Well, that's just Paul McCartney looking to hire somebody.
We're getting painted into a corner because of our cultural influenced ideas. If our culture didn't consider it such a bad thing, it wouldn't be so.
Well,
but I think that culture is changing slowly but surely, and I think it's going to be a good thing.
Well, I hope that's true, but I still think there are people out there who just don't want to do business with. They don't want to have their affairs handled by. They don't want to put their trust in someone who they think may be using regularly anything.
And there are people that want to do business with them because they believe they can see outside the box and they possess a chemical that opens their mind and frees the way of thinking.
That's a great idea, but Peter, could you imagine walking into a courtroom and the judge sniffing and saying, Mr. Haven, please approach the bench?
Well, I have definitely seen videotape as part of our substance abuse training a long time ago. They showed us a videotape of a lawyer who basically tried to conduct a hearing and he was just completely intoxicated. And he tried to muddle through it and he couldn't do it. And I could potentially see a judge possibly doing that. I would also worry, quite frankly, if I was in front of a jury. I'm taking up their time. I'm taking up days of their lives. And, if they smell that off of someone in the courtroom, I think some of them may be offended. And
wait a minute. You think many lawyers, Peter, would light up a doob before they were called into a courtroom?
Well,
even if I was a hardcore smoker and you have a business, I still want to buy my marijuana. No one's going to give it to me for free. I still got to protect my business. I still got to do work. I still got to be a productive member of society in order to make money, in order to enjoy my life, in order to buy my marijuana.
The answer to your question is, I think, yes. And I think that some people may believe it helps them think better. It may help them calm down and relax. Some lawyers are incredibly nervous.
I'll take that point one step further. They could be on prescription drugs, Xanax.
Well,
and
the same thing holds true. And we're just talking about people who may be using it for light purposes. I mean, you can get addicted to anything. If somebody's addicted, then they can't really help their behavior. And I think that's what happened to the poor lawyer I saw in the videotape. I mean, I think he was an alcoholic and he couldn't help it.
And the addiction rate of marijuana is somewhere at 9%, while other things like alcohol is in the 20%, and opiates up in the 30%.
Well,
it's
very interesting.
Let's talk about prescription drugs.
Sam, I have the same problem with prescription drugs. I really do. I think we over-medicate, over-prescribe, overtake, overuse, overdose everything.
Yep.
And we talked about big business. Well, what was big business? What were the tobacco people accused of and doing with tobacco? They were accused of putting addictive chemicals into it. So, you say 9%, and that's a good thing. I can see some big corporate person saying, 9%, we can do better than that.
No. 9%,
we
got to
up those rates.
Right.
And 9% also is, in my opinion, is a big number. It's a big number.
The government they're going to have to regulate it in order to make money out of it. And to make money out of it, it's going to be at the actual purchase level, my opinion. I think it's going to be very difficult for Officer XYZ to stop someone driving, and they say, okay, what's the test going to do? They can't take blood because you can refuse.
Well,
that.
I think it's just going to be a smell test. It's just going to be a smell test.
And then on top of that, I mean, once big business and big pharma comes in, they'll lobby the government to write the laws exactly how they want them to be, so they don't pay any taxes anyways.
Well, unfortunately, look, if you want to legalize it and decriminalize it, that road that you're talking about is unavoidable. That's going
to
be
so
part
I'm
going
to have to pay the tax. No, I'll pay the tax. The buyer will buy the tax.
Well,
the purchaser is going to buy the tax.
My point is this: if it becomes completely legal and decriminalized, whatever term you want to use, and it's all doors are open, then you bet your big business is going to roll in. Can't
avoid. Absolutely. I agree with
you,
Peter.
That's another part of the social experiment and the trade-off. You know, if there's money to be made here, big business is going to roll in, and they are gonna squash the little
guy. Right, and then they're going to wipe clean all the federal taxes, and it won't be any benefit to us as a country.
Oh, no, I disagree, Muggs. There will be a tax, because it'll be the user tax.
Yeah,
the sales tax. There'll be a sales tax.
A sales tax, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm talking about the big business.
They won't pay. The XYZ company, Monsanto, marijuana wing of the company, won't pay a tax at all. But when I go to buy my joint, I will pay a sales tax, I will pay a whatnot tax, and right up front. And that money,
exactly.
I still think that
but
will
you
be...
But you as a user are paying the tax. When,
of course.
When
is that
the
way it always happens?
Making all the money and not paying any tax at all.
That's the way it happens. And unfortunately,
yes,
and Peter's right about
and
that.
And it's wrong.
I agree with you.
Wrong.
I think what it should be, if they were smart, they'd leave it to make they could rebuild it, help rebuild this country by letting real farmers farm it and crop it and take it to the marketplace wherever that should be and sell it, you know, and go from there. That would be fab in a wave of magic wand. I'd like to see that happen, but we all know that's not going to happen because big business is and big government incestuous in bed together is never going to allow that to happen.
And they're the people that are going to be interested in raising the addiction rates, not the farmers, not the people using.
Oh, no, right. Peter's right. They'll have a board meeting. Some guy will go, 9%? This is ridiculous. We can do better than that. I mean, I can almost see a Saturday Night Live sketch.
Okay, guys. I don't want to change the complete subject, but... you know, months and months and months ago, I ran a series of programs about the, you know, Mexican cartels, and it really wasn't so much, you know, about marijuana, but, you know, more about cocaine. And the other drugs that are coming across the border. So
you're a brave man, Simon.
Right? Yeah. Right. I know people in low places. Right?
Well,
no, we know them in high places. Pun intended.
Right.
Oh, that's a good one.
All right, but with medical marijuana being legal, you know, where's the Mexican cartels in this? And surely it's better just to grow the stuff legally, you know, rather than try and bust it through the border. Nugs, any idea?
They're trying to sneak into the medical arena and pretend to be a patient trying to help himself and help others, but they're also families that are being held at ransom so their family in the states will grow marijuana for them, particularly on federal land and state parks, not necessarily indoors growing in their houses and stuff. I'm sure it does happen, but it's much more expensive of a venture than just to grow on some land outdoors. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a lot of cartel-influenced people in our federal lands growing, and it's making it dangerous for people to enjoy these areas and spend their weekends camping because they might, you know, trek across some illegal marijuana field. This is a big problem. And the flow of marijuana particularly has slowed across the border. And now basically all they do is they use marijuana to as the defensive blocker to block while there's a small amount of heroin or cocaine coming across right in the next few vehicles down, you know. So they marijuana is disposable for them on the border.
Okay. Now I obviously don't want to discuss your particular situation, but I've seen enough documentaries that there's an area called the Golden Triangle, which is up in Northern California.
Yeah, wow. Mendocino County and all that. Trinity.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you're a legal grower, but
yeah.
As I understand it, you're somewhat south, and I believe your plants are inside. What are the circumstances? Yeah, was it hard to get a permit? It hard to run through all of the red tape?
Not particularly. I'm a patient grower. I have a recommendation from a doctor saying that I can grow X amount of plants, and I abide by that recommendation. And I also grow for other patients that don't have the ability or the resources to grow for themselves. So there really isn't per se license or, you know, fees that I pay the government to grow because I'm not a commercial grower. I'm just a patient who needs medicine who I could go to another grower and get it, but I prefer to have quality control over my own medicine.
Now, you say you grow it for other patients. May I ask how many other patients?
About six.
And the amount that you grow is basically to service that number of people, like basically a half dozen people.
Exactly.
Well, it's interesting. So there's no permitting that's required. You don't file for and get a permit. You don't pay an application fee. You basically just comply with the exception to the marijuana laws, which basically indicate that these laws, accepted from these laws, is the cultivation for medical purposes of a limited number of marijuana for a limited number of people who basically have the recommendation of a doctor to use it for ease their suffering or help their symptoms, what have you.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting thing. Do you worry about somebody knocking on the door and busting you, or do you feel pretty secure, or how does that work?
Of course I feel worried against being prosecuted or discriminated against, for for my medical condition and the right to grow those plants. But then again, I follow the laws ever changing as closely as I possibly can, which would include displaying recommendations and agreements on the exterior of the grow, so when the authorities would go in, they would say, hey, this person is growing for this person, this person, this person. He is allowed this amount of plants, so when they go in there, they can make a decision on how legal or illegal it is.
Yeah. And then, of course, if you disagree with the police's assessment, you have the opportunity to, put up whatever defense you have. Now, it's my recollection that the medical marijuana exceptions typically are associated with certain physical conditions, and I seem to recall diabetes being one of them, and also, I think, cataracts. But what were some of the other conditions, if you know?
Well, I have ulcerative colitis, which and suffer from PTSD, so that's another one. If you have, like, sleep apnea, certain neuropathic type of pain, cancer, a few other ones are on the list of medically accepted reasons.
Very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that means Peter's gone into think mode.
Well, I recalled this because I had to look at a statute a while ago on this issue for a case I was working on, and I seem to recall that the medical marijuana exception was linked to certain diagnosed illnesses or conditions, and I couldn't remember what they were, but many of the ones he said were they triggered my recollection, and they were on the list that I could recall.
Yeah, and there are others that, well, kind of that say if the doctor thinks that this would be beneficial, so it doesn't necessarily have to fall on that list. It can be something else that the doctor just believes that it would benefit you.
Okay, so here's the question. Doctor says it's okay. It's recommended. Your choices are, twofold. You can grow your own, but I understand there are limitations. Or you can go to...
to a facility.
Right.
A dispensary. A collective.
A dispensary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, you just have a limited grow operation?
Yes.
Right. You don't operate a dispensary?
No.
Okay.
I have an agreement with a dispensary, and they accept my medicine depending on their quality control standards, and that's basically it. They handle all distribution and all the taxes involved and fees and all that stuff.
Okay. So you're not really...
And they verify patients and all that. They make sure that the people that shop there have recommendations and follow the rules as closely as possible.
Okay, so essentially you're growing for you and six other people. However, there's some extra stuff, shall we say, and you send it to the dispensary.
Exactly, to cover costs for electricity, nutrients, and supplies.
Okay.
So there is no profit.
I wasn't getting to the profit area, but having lived for 10 years in Southern California. I know how expensive electricity is. You're operating an indoor grow op. How much does it cost you each month just for the electric bill for the lights?
Well, you're paying when you're in that hot. In California, they have a tier system. If you use less than certain amount of electricity, it's say 15 cents per kilowatt hour. Then you get into tier 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And as you go up in that tier and you're using, say, 2,000, maybe 3,000 kilowatt hour, you're paying 18 cents, sometimes 22 cents per kilowatt hour. So your bill for electricity for me ranges about $900 to $1,000 every single month.
Ouch! I don't like it already.
Exactly. So to cover those costs, you have to get rid of excess product. Otherwise, there would be no reason to be doing this.
Let me tell you, if I could, I'll give you a little segue, just slightly. I represented a client who was involved in a real estate transaction, and the client was a realtor, and the realtor was commissioned with the task of finding commercial rental space to medical marijuana dispensary, grower and dispenser, and they asked the realtor to look for an appropriate place. That's what they said. And they told the realtor that the zoning they needed was zoning whatever it was, 1, 2, or 3. And the realtor didn't know what an appropriate place was, and it wasn't the realtor's responsibility to find an appropriate place. All the realtor could do was find a place that was zoned, 1, 2, or 3. And they had some other consultant that they were working with who specialized in, helping them find suitable properties. Well, they found a property. They liked it. It was in the zoning range that they had requested. And then they signed a big lease, long-term lease. And then right after they entered into the lease, the city told them, no, you can't do it here. Mm-hmm. And I got involved because the whole thing, blew up and turned into a lawsuit, which, came in like a lion and went out like a lamb. Let's just say that. But these are just one of the other problems and issues, and I think it's difficult to have any assurance at all if you're growing, unless you're in some sort of fairly secluded or remote area. But I think it's difficult to have any assurance at all that the city won't, municipalities and counties won't come down and say, no, you can't do it there.
Exactly. There is no assurance at all.
Yeah. It's unfortunate or fortunate, depending on where you come down on this debate, but there's just little or no assurance what's permitted one day, maybe somebody will say, nope, you can't do it there tomorrow.
Right. And then you have to be certain distance from schools and playgrounds and all these other ever-changing local regulations.
Yeah. And so, we were talking about cartels and things, but, they presumably, to the extent they get involved in these businesses, they're not going to be encumbered by such restraints.
Exactly. They're not.
Yeah.
On a slightly different tone, Peter, how much do you spend per month on your electric bill?
Well, that's interesting. I would say, let me just see if I could do some quick. I'd say my total electric bills are probably, combined $100 or so, maybe a little bit more per month. That's my guess. I have to consider business and premises as well. So I'm lumping it all together.
Oh, okay.
The difference between his operation and a grow operation is you're running 1,000-watt lights inside of in a grow, and you're running 100-watt lights inside of your room to illuminate your workspace.
Big difference.
A huge difference.
You've got to duplicate the sun.
Exactly.
I just need
that's
to
why
see.
People
I don't
grow outdoors.
Yeah,
because the
and
sun
of course
is
that's,
green.
That's more risky. That's more problematic,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because you got your neighbors who could rat you out, or people that are called rippers who will just come in the night and steal your plants and or take off whatever usable product they can off of it, and you could spend all your money and all your time for that, you know, 6 months of growing, and then and all one night it could all disappear simply because it's well exposed.
Yeah.
And you have environmental changes that can affect the quality of your medicine in the crop itself.
Approximately how long does it take to bring a plant to fruition? Yeah, from seed to harvest.
3 months, 3 to 4 months. Indoors. Now outdoors, it's about 6 months.
And presumably you have timers on the light, so you can fold the plant into what time of year it is.
Exactly. I like I said, I grow indoors in a CEA environment, which is called closed environment agriculture. It's a method of growing where you're not exchanging the air from outside into your grow environment. So basically I have a 5-ton air conditioner that takes the heat from the light bulbs and all the other pumps running in the environment and takes that away and eliminates the exhausting of smells. And it's also CO2 supplemented, meaning that I pump in carbon dioxide into the environment to make the crop grow faster and produce more weight per square meter. And it's basically it's a hydroponic method where I use like fertilizers to water and feed my plants through a soilless medium, which is basically looks like dirt, but it isn't dirt. It's like spongem, peat moss, volcanic rock, and stuff like that to support the root system.
Hey, Sam.
But my neighbors don't smell marijuana unless I'm smoking it. They don't know that I'm growing marijuana unless they come into the room or they go to my electrical box and see the meter spinning at such a rapid speed.
Right. Hey, Sam, fancy starting up a new business?
No, I want Mugs to send me some of his crop, though. 421 South Main Street, Poland, Ohio 44514. Put it in a cut out the center of a Bible. Put it in there. Wrap it all up. Electric tape, and away you go.
I'd like to mention that I get crazy amounts of text or emails from people that somehow get my number or email address saying, hey, I live in blah, blah, blah state. Can you send me a package and all this other stuff? It's nonstop spam.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously. And you probably make a point. You would become a raging capitalist if you did something like that. And you'd be no different than many other capitalists are doing stuff years and years ago with different sorts of products. And so to that, I applaud you not for doing what you're doing, just the patience to be a farmer, because that's what you are. You're a farmer. And to be a modern-day farmer, it's just amazing. We're just listening to you and the cost incurred and the pride you take in your craft. I applaud you, sir. I think I wouldn't have the patience to get up to do all that stuff to make sure the water's the proper temperature. As Peter said, you're duplicating the Earth, the Moon, the Sun, and all that mm-hmm. sort of stuff. That's got to be extremely difficult and time-consuming, and your patience must be incredible, and I applaud you for that. But my son, who's listening to our show, lives in New York, and he sent me an email because he heard us talking about the smell. Are you ready for this, guys?
Smoke
shop selling in Manhattan's East Village. There's a neighborhood pot that's a big place where people are smoking pot. My son's a grad student in journalism at the City University of New York. He says there's a vaporizer G-Pen that sells for $90, and they're used primarily by patients who are prescribed medical marijuana so they can have the benefits without the telltale odor. So somebody is already... he's going to help Peter. When Peter gets on the elevator, he's going to be smelling beautiful aromatherapy fragrances in the future.
You know, I have a guilty confession.
I smoke marijuana in our airport with that. I use a vaporizer that contains concentrated marijuana, which is typically called wax here out in California. It's basically on the order of 80 to 90% pure THC and other active cannabinoids. And I smoke it through this vaporizer, and you can't even, it's portable. It looks like one of those e-cigarettes. And I can smoke it
That's
in airport.
Said, yeah.
I can smoke it in fucking every venue, and nobody says anything because they think it's an e-cigarette, and it has no trace smell of marijuana at all.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And I'm
glad
out.
You.
I've been smoking,
I'm glad you brought up your son.
What's
the military policy on smoking marijuana?
Oh, I forget it. My one son's in the military. I don't know where he is. He's on a special mission, quote unquote, in Puerto Rico. So he's probably smoking some really good ganja down there. He's in San Juan on some training mission for the Phoenix Ravens before they go do something on the ball. He doesn't, he can only share so much with me. And all he did was just tell me the beaches, nightlife on Saturday night in San Juan was a real trip. So I can't wait to hear what he has to tell me. But no, he can't.
There's zero tolerance in the military.
Yeah, beyond zero. I mean, especially since my son, as I said before on the show, he's been deployed in Muslim-fighting countries or fighting the Muslims, whatever, the bad guys, the terrorists. We have to adhere to the strict Muslim code. No pornography, the women who are fighting can't commingle with the men. There's no tobacco chewing, there's no alcohol. I mean, just terrible. My dad died, is in Arlington, and he fought in Europe. And as I said before, if he would have found out that you couldn't, when you were in conquering another country, and you couldn't go mingle with the French women and the Italian women, they would have taken their guns and shot the American. They would have shot Roosevelt, Churchill, and Eisenhower. You think about that. That was part of the fun of liberating France. He said it was nothing like liberating an Italian town. You know what I mean?
The zero tolerance policy that the military has on drugs—that's regardless of what theater of conflict you're in. That's across the board.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's funny, guys? In the world, since A-Rod's been such a big thing, we're tougher on people who smoke marijuana than we are with people who use human growth hormones and steroids and things that we all know are really bad for you. That's just common sense, But think about that. We're tougher. I mean, if a baseball player gets test positive for smoking marijuana, I mean, they throw the book at him. A-Rod gets whatever happened to him, he's going to appeal it. He's going to go on. He becomes a national spokesperson for human growth hormones. I mean, the priorities are screwed up. But one thing you guys talked about with the cartels, and what I'd like to interject this thought, is let's put those son of a bitches out of business by legalization. I mean, it's going to hurt them, isn't it?
Well,
isn't it going to hurt them? Or are they going to be the new, what happened with the mafia who took over once prohibition ended? They ended up getting the distribution routes for for the beer industries and the liquor industries and all that. If that's what's going to happen if we legalize marijuana, the Pablo Escobars are going to be able to open up. He'll have a chain. The cartels will own the chain of buy my marijuana here, shops, or am I missing something?
No, I think you're right on the money. And we're getting close to the end of the program. Nugs, how do you feel? You know, do you think that you know, the cartels are going to you know, increase their visibility?
I think it's definitely possible. But there are ways that we could influence that by making sure that it's only American citizens that are doing these things and people that are vindicated to a certain degree of their agenda behind it all. And that means, you know, having the decriminalization thing rather than legalization thing will probably benefit the American people and not the cartels.
I'm not
it is possible. Very possible.
Yeah, I'm not sure I buy into it, but it's possible. Okay.
I think we as Americans would love to get into this business just as much as a cartel would, and we'll have an overwhelming American group of people doing it instead of being overweighed by the cartels.
Maybe what we should do is start growing coca and smuggling it to South America.
Yeah, exactly. And legalization of every drug instead of just marijuana make it so it's not profitable for any of them to make any money on any of it, and give responsible adults the choice to use whatever drug, whatever chemical they want to on their own free time to enjoy their life and make their life better.
Okay, on that note, I have to wrap this up, but I'd love to go once around the table and get everyone's final thoughts. Peter, I'm going to pick on you first.
Oh, well, I'm honored. I thought today's discussion was very fascinating, and I think we covered a lot of territory, and as I like to say, we solved one problem. Now we only have about 1,000 or more to go. So I look forward to next week's discussion.
Sam?
I really enjoyed today. It was nice to take a break from the political craziness that goes on in the world. Not that I don't like talking about that, but this is a fascinating discussion, as Peter said. Muggs, again, I applaud you. You're doing something that's great and wonderful. It's a beneficiary of 6 people and yourself we take care of, and terrific. And like I said, my address is 421 South Main Street, Poland, Ohio, 4544. Please send me a sample. I'll get back to you. Simon, thank you very much, as always, and everybody have a great week.
As a lawyer, don't send him a sample, okay? That's my advice to you.
Yeah, he is my lawyer on Sundays.
That's for everyone's benefit, okay? That's all I'm going to say.
I have to agree with Peter. Right? It would be a bad thing. Nugs. It's been delightful talking to you. Do you have any parting thoughts for us?
Well, I'd like to thank you for inviting me on your show and giving me the chance to put out my perspective. I'd like to say that God grows marijuana. I believe that marijuana or any plant shouldn't be illegal. and I formed a symbiotic relationship with my plants to provide the best medicine and best high that I possibly can for me and for my other users.
Perfect. We will be back next week. Who knows what we'll be talking about? If Sam Moffey has his way, he'll be higher than a kite.
And I might... Yep.
All right. Till next week, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy and safe week. And we'll be back again next Sunday. I thank you for all taking part, and we'll be back next week. Till then, goodbye.
Thanks, Simon.
Bye.